Welcome to the Carol Reitberger Show, where each week you'll hear a new topic dealing with health and wellness. Carol will be taking your calls and answering your personal questions. And now, here's Carol.
Is there something eating at you? Do you use food to soothe yourself emotionally? Is there something sweetness in life that just seems to be missing? Do you crave love? Do you eat to reward yourself? Does food fill that void of being lonely or being bored? Interesting way to start the show, isn't it, today? Thanks for joining me. I'm your host, medical intuitive Carol Reitberger, and the topic of today's show is transforming emotional eating patterns. And throughout the show, I'm going to be discussing why we eat emotionally and defining the difference between emotional eating and eating because you're hungry, and then how what you are using food for can actually talk to you through the body to be able to reveal where you're emotionally being eaten up or what emotions are actually driving your food cravings and so forth. And then in the last segment, I'm going to be sharing suggestions on how you can change those emotional eating patterns. Interesting way, as I said, to start the show by asking those questions. And that's really what today's show is going to be about. And how you answer those questions tells you a lot about where you are in your relationships with food. So interesting topic. I want to thank my listener, Sandy, for sending me this request. As a show suggestion, if you have a show suggestion for me, just go to my website, www.ritberger.com, and let me know what that is, and then I'll try to squeeze it into the schedule, as I did with Sandy's, and then move forward by answering some of your requests. I also wanted to invite you to join me on my Your Health teleclass that's going to be happening May 26th at 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific Daylight Time and 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. The topic of this month's teleclass is asthma, and I'm going to be sharing what causes asthma. There's a lot of interesting things that cause it that we're really not even aware of, and one of the newest things that we're finding from a research standpoint is that asthma has a lot to do with climate, and it has a lot to do with inadequate vitamin D3. So the research I found that people that are in the northern hemisphere, England, and kind of if we were draw a line across that hemisphere from England over, tend to have higher rates of asthma than anywhere else in the world. So it's something that we can do from climate, but you know, we use so much sunblock right now to be able to protect ourselves from the sun, but we actually create vitamin D3 through the skin, and it's very, very important, D3, D1 through the skin, and it's very, very important for us to be able to get adequate amounts because that can affect so many of the health issues, and asthma is one of them. I'm also going to be sharing how asthma really is from the standpoint of looking at it, an emotional disorder that happens in the body. There's a lot of hidden emotional contributors behind asthma. I'm going to be sharing that in the teleclass as well, how it looks energetically, the role that your personality plays in increasing your susceptibility to developing asthma. And then also, as with all of my teleclasses, I share a myriad of suggestions, alternative choices and suggestions that you can use. And for this particular topic, how to manage asthma and actually how to prevent it from happening. I'll also be talking about the connection between asthma and allergies. Then after all of that, I always stay on the line for at least 30 minutes after the call and do exactly what I'm doing on my show today. I spend time answering questions from my participants in my teleclasses. So again, the teleclass is free. It's May 26th. It's at 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. That's 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. If you or a loved one or a friend suffers from asthma, please direct them to my website, www.ritberger.com. And then what I'll be doing is they can register, get all the call-in information, and then sit through the call, and then immediately following, well, actually a few days following the teleclass itself, there'll be downloads that are available for the people who weren't able to make it. So again, that's Thursday, May 26th at 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Also, I'm going to be sharing my medical intuitive skills with you today. So if you have a question for me about your health, or you have a question for me about today's topic, which is emotional eating patterns, please give me a call at 1-877-230-3062. That number is good in the U.S. and Canada, and also for international callers. Of course, international callers, you have to dial your international calling code before dialing 877-230-3062. So let's start out the show by really defining what emotional eating is. Emotional eating is when you reach for food when you're not physically hungry or you're not in need of nutrition. That's really what's defined as emotional eating. Basically, emotional eating has nothing to do with your body's need for foods. It's just a way to be able to nurture you emotionally. Emotional eating is when you turn to food, carbohydrates or sugar. So often when we get into these places emotionally, we go for sugar or processed or simple carbohydrates. Then what we do is we get that instant burst of energy, which gives us this high, makes us feel good. We can kind of move ourselves into action, but then we always have that crash and burn after that particular glucose is metabolized, and then we go through that energy low. So emotional eating is when you turn to food or sugar because you're either bored, you're tense, you're stressed, you're angry, you're sad, and you're even depressed. Now, when the case of depression, while it is an emotional reaction and triggers a lot of emotional eating, in the case of true clinical depression, there will be a chemistry change in the body, basically in serotonin and dopamine, that is going to literally create cravings from a physical level. You will feel like you absolutely have to have whatever you're craving in order for your body to be nourished. So when we look at depression, we have to really look at it, first of all, from that psychological factor, what is triggering that depression, and then we really have to find out if it really is a physical issue that somebody's dealing with, because in that particular case, we're really not talking about emotional eating, meaning that we're grabbing for food and eating things because we're not just because we need to soothe ourselves. So you have to be really careful when it comes to depression to really know, are you eating for the emotional reasons or is there something clinically, chemically that's happening in your body? If you are prone to depression based on genetic predisposition or based on just the factors that are happening in your life via stress, and you know, sometimes so many things get on our plate that emotionally we suppress our emotions to the point where they just kind of build up inside of us. We really need to go at that point in time and say, okay, is this emotional or is it something physical? So if you do suffer from depression, what I would encourage you to do is to really talk to your doctor to get a real good sense around the eating patterns associated with that depression, so then you can be able to not feel guilty when you get those cravings that are actually happening physically. All of us have experienced emotional eating to some degree or another. For example, it may be that we're working on the computer, or we're doing something that just isn't mentally stimulating, or there's so much repetition to it, or actually some people will find themselves getting bored. So that particular time when we find that eating to that little slight degree, that's when we want that nibble of chocolate or that extra helping of our favorite comfort food. When we're hungry, or that extra cookie that comes out of the cookie jar just because it tastes so darn good. So when we eat in that case where it isn't really something that has a pattern to it, that's really not what we consider when we look at psychologically emotional eating. What it says is at that moment that we're craving something, we can deal with that. We take care of the way we need it with food, but it's not something that we should feel guilty about. When we really are looking at emotional eating patterns, what we're really looking at is when that eating pattern, based on where you are emotionally, again, it can be boredom, tension, stress, sadness, whatever the emotion, guilt may be another one. When we're really looking at emotional eating, what happens is that eating process becomes very disruptive to someone's life. It's when you have weight and health issues because you're eating the things that aren't healthy for you, and you know that. We all know that. You don't have to be a medical intuitive. We know that there's times that we pick up certain things that we know that it's really not what we need, but we just want to eat it. That's emotional eating. But again, you have to look at it and be really clear on how you're eating and how often. So when it becomes something that you become obsessive about, or you can't seem to psychologically live without having that extra piece of candy or that extra cookie or something, then what you want to do is you really want to look at the underlying causes of the emotional eating. And that emotional eating in this particular sense is that habitual eating to cover up emotions instead of really finding constructive ways to be able to communicate them. This tends to be a problem that really is greater for women from the standpoint that we do tend to suppress our emotions. And then as a result, those emotions build up, they fester, and psychologically it takes a lot to be able to feed those emotions. And if we could find healthy, constructive ways to be able to feed the emotions versus food, then we would find that we wouldn't fall prey to those emotional eating patterns. The reality is that food is what makes us feel good. It's part of our grounding process. It fills up empty time. It's really nurturing. It's a social and supportive activity. And for the most part, it's a harmless way to deal with stress, frustration, anger, or despair. And then again, boredom. So, excuse me for sounding like a broken record on this, but when we're looking at emotional eating, all of us do it at some point in time. It's just the patterns that you're looking for and how often we find ourselves habitually getting up at midnight or having to go to the kitchen and eat and then go to the kitchen multiple times. And another emotional eating pattern is people that will have candy that is hidden or stored in their drawers or in different places where they can go and soothe themselves emotionally by eating it. But what they're really doing is they really don't want people to know that they're doing this and that they're using food this way. So you can start to see a lot of the implications that we really have to look at to find out, is this truly an eating pattern process tied to the emotions, or is it something that just is that we do once in a while? One of the things that emotional eaters have in common is they tend to disconnect from their emotions. So the best way to find out those emotions is to really eavesdrop and listen to what you're saying to yourself. We do self-talk a lot. So we could be getting up out of a chair or doing something or coming in from outside and saying, you know, I really just need that boost of energy. I think I'm just going to get something to eat. Or, you know, boy, I'm just bored. I don't know what I'm going to do. And, you know, I feel really sad. I've been thinking about all the things that have been happening and relationships and everything. Those are the things that the self-talk will tell us, that the reason that we're going to reach for food isn't because we're hungry, and it isn't that our body needs nourishment. It's just from that psychological perspective. Another thing that emotional eaters will find themselves saying all the time to themselves is, I know I need to stop. I need to stop eating, but I just can't seem to stop the process. I can't change the pattern. It's become so much a part of my day or my nighttime activity. And then that's what, again, another indicator. If you tend to be a person who wakes up in the middle of the night and you start craving sugar, then what you your body is saying is that this is an emotional eating pattern. There's something that maybe you're missing during the day, a sweetness of life, or, and when I say that, more of a passion or something that really captures your interest and holds your interest and keeps your mind active. When those are the situations, then rarely will we get up in the middle of the night and find ourselves wanting to get that cookie or that piece of chocolate, whatever we need. So again, remember that the most effective way that you can deal with emotional patterns around eating is to really find constructive ways to deal with your emotions. And the one emotion that we really hold inside that we seem to bury, it's part of our conditioning, it's not just in the United States, it's all over the world, is the not finding constructive ways to be able to express anger. And one of the things that I always teach in my classes is I teach people to go out and buy the most beautiful journal that you just can put your hands on. And, you know, just look until you find that one. And when you find it, you'll know it. It'll be the most beautiful journal there is. There may be bling and rhinestones and all these things all over. It may have a simple picture. It may be simple, but you will know that that's your journal. And then what you'll want to do is you want to put your name on the first page of that journal, and you want to put my anger journal. And any time that you feel angry, that appeal of the journal will ask you to call you basically over to put down the emotions you're feeling. What has triggered all of this? How is this happening in your life? And what can you do to let this out? There's other ways that are wonderful, constructive ways that we can deal with the emotional eating, and we'll share those in the next segment. But the emotion that we tend to bury the most in our humanness is anger. And that really, I've found in my work as a medical intuitive, tends to be the one emotion that seems to fester inside, and it irritates us, and it kind of drains us of energy and robs us of that joy and that sweetness of life, because we keep ruminating on the same thing over and over again. And the more we do, the stronger that emotion gets. So if we can find a way to be able to allow that emotion to be expressed in a way that we can feel safe and comfortable with it and don't feel like we're really attacking people, then what we can do is we can do that process versus going and looking for food. So again, listen to your self-talk, the things that you're saying to yourself. If you find yourself saying, you know, I feel so guilty about doing this, why can't I stop this? Those are the things that maybe in some cases that it will require the help of a mental health care professional, such as a psychotherapist or a psychologist. And I will tell you, one of the real effective ways to be able to deal with emotional eating patterns is through hypnotherapy. So that's something that you can look for, because hypnotherapy can help you find below the surface what is triggering that eating need that you have and what needs to come to the surface. And it's a very effective, profound, actually a very powerful and even a quick way to be able to look below that surface to find what those emotions are. So those are some of the things that you can do. So again, pay attention to your self-talk. Pay attention to if you feel guilty. Pay attention to when you go to eat. Maybe there's a pattern in your day of something that you do that just, it's just, you know, not really mentally stimulating, or maybe you have highs and lows in energy. Maybe your energy level is low at 3 o'clock, and that's going to be the time that you're going to want to go to the kitchen and get those munchies. So if you do and you find that, then what you want to do is you want to replace those munchies with complex carbohydrates, things that can give you that sustained energy, that can give you that crunch and that taste and so forth in your mouth, but it isn't something that's going to spike your sugar or glycemic index and the sugar and everything. So those are some of the things you can do. And then again, in the next segment, I'm going to be sharing more of the different suggestions of what you can do. But really, if you find yourself in this, just stop, take a deep breath, and really look at your patterns and ask yourself, is this really an emotional eating process, or is this just something that happens once in a while? So let's go ahead and jump in. Hi, Katie from California. How can I help you, hon?
Hello?
Hi, Katie. How can I help you?
Yeah, hi. I was wondering, this last weekend, and I feel like it was probably a very emotional thing for me, and that's why it happened. I got very disoriented when I was driving, and very dizzy and very weird, and it's sticking with me, and it's not going away, and the doctors haven't been able to find anything, and I'm wondering if it's just nothing to worry about, or if it's something that was, I don't know.
Yeah. You know, sweetie, I don't mean to take away your individuality around this, but I need to tell you, you are now the 11th person that has reached out to me starting on Friday to ask what this disorientation is. And what you're dealing with is different but similar. So one of the things, if you don't mind, I'm going to kind of take this from a woo-woo perspective, first of all, and to offer some of the shifts that are happening energetically. We are off balance energetically. And what that means is that we're really stepping out of the old patterns of who we are. We're even releasing a lot of old emotional patterns that we've had and letting go of a lot of emotions that have been buried really not just below the surface, but very deeply inside. And we're standing, it's kind of like we're stepping into an unknown frontier. And there is a psychological as well as an energetic disorientation that can happen at that point in time. It's kind of like everything that was familiar no longer can be pulled up. And the gift of that from this kind of esoteric perspective, is that it's asking us to look forward. Stop looking behind. Don't look to the past to be able to compare where we are in the present, or to look to the past to drive what we do in the future. So from an energetic and an esoteric standpoint, it is a lot of this final throes, as I call it, of leaving that old fear-based consciousness that is going to literally has held us down for so many thousands of generations, actually, not just us, but there's just been a pattern and a process. And so from the esoteric standpoint, we are in a time that we are literally, the universe is kind of in this reflective, contemplative state of sync and being. It's not, it's always moving forward, but it's our job to find who we are and how we want to move forward in the quality of life and the type of thoughts and the emotions that we want to integrate into our life rather than fear, love, or rather than that anxiety, excitement. So there's a lot of things there. So that's very real. It's, you know, those things happen where the conscious mind can't figure out what's happening, but it's very, very real. This particular introspective, reflective time that we're in actually was kicked into place the end of March, and it will actually become in this lull before it gets into this activity flow again. That's not going to happen until about mid-July. So what I can say to you from an esoteric standpoint is just kind of go with the flow. When these strong emotional charges come up, then give yourself the freedom, the time, the breathe, to take that pulse time or that quiet time. Even if you do, you know, a 5-minute, 2 times a day quiet time, that will help all of us, you individually, me individually, and all of us collectively, to be able to find our bearings. That's really the metaphor right now, is to find our bearings. So that's kind of what I call the woo-woo part of it, sweetie.
Scary. It felt like, it almost felt like I was going to have a seizure or, I mean, it was just really overwhelming. I couldn't drive. And then ever since then, I've been really woozy and spacey and,
yeah, so that's the energetic part of it. Now let me come into your body as you so kindly opened up when you first started talking to me. One of the things, there's a couple of things, sweetie, that is going on that has happened is that, yes, it was triggered by a strong emotional release that you have been working on. Feels like for probably 6 months, maybe even a year, not really aware of it, but for the last 6 months, there's a lot of release work that you're doing, and there's a lot of emotions. And it feels like about 7 to 10 days, I'm going to say 10 days before this happened, if you go back, something occurred that emotionally knocked you off balance.
Mm-hmm.
And now, so what that did is it tightened the muscles in your trapezius muscle structure, and that is the muscle structure that basically is the top of the bottom of the brainstem, cervical vertebrae 1, down to the thoracic vertebrae 5, I believe that it is in your particular case. And so what happened is that you were very tense, and your muscles were very, very tight. It caused your head to rotate. That caused your equilibrium to get off. It caused your inner ear, that eustachian tube, that inner ear to get off. It put pressure on a cranial nerve that also is a cranial nerve that is number 10 vagus, that's part of the nausea, the dizziness. It almost feels like it was a benign positional vertigo that basically happened because of where you were prior to either turning your head or moving your body, your shoulders and head in a direction that caused something to really tighten up to the point where it locked you down. And when that occurs, it can create pressure. It can create disorientation, that loss of balance. It can create dizziness. It can also create that mild nausea. When I still touch you, honey, when I go up, I can actually feel it in my body. When I go, if you were to go to the back of your neck and you would go down from the kind of the ear part of the skull down till you get where that you get that indentation, right there, your atlas is off. And if you could work with someone with cranial sacral or work with a non-force chiropractor that used an activator or used muscle manipulation to be able to drop that atlas back in place, then what you'll do is then your head will literally drop into the way it needs to and your muscles will relax. The other thing that you can do, it was not a seizure. I'm going to be very straightforward about some of the things because I can, all of a sudden your brain came in and goes, now come on, Carol, this is all really good. Let's get netted down to the bottom line. This was not a seizure, honey. If you were to look at benign positional vertigo and look at the symptomology, you're going to find a lot of what you had, that occurred in your body based on that. And there's things that you can actually do that can be able to help you in working with that myofascial relief, myofascial release, cranial sacral work, working with a chiropractor. Any of those things would be able to help you with that. And the reason the doctors can't find anything is that what they would be looking for, honey, the seizures or a potential for stroke or anything, the lack of oxygen to the brain, anything that would cause that, there's nothing there. That they were able to find. I'm going to validate them. It's, you know, it doesn't mean they're right or wrong, but there is nothing there. It just feels like that tension created your head and that atlas to get off, and then that's what's creating the problem. And part of the reason that it's not going away is it's still off, sweetie.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you can find someone that you can trust and work with, and doing that, you could work with an acupuncturist as well. Then what that would do is it would help release the tension, and that would help your body feel much, much better.
All right. Thank you very much.
You are very welcome. Thank you for calling me. All right. What I want to do is I want to take a quick I want to take a quick commercial break, and then I'm going to be right back to talk more about transforming emotional eating patterns. Stay tuned.
Is your chance to be part of the show. Call 877-230-3062. Call in with your questions or thoughts and talk with the host and their guest. Again, that number is 877-230-3062.
How would you like to learn the hidden meanings behind illness and see how a medical intuitive views illness? You can by joining medical intuitive Carol Reitberger each month on her teleclass series, Your Health. Each month, she'll be featuring a different health issue and sharing the contributors behind it. You can register online at www.reitberger.com. That's www.reitberger.com.
Have you ever wanted to talk with a medical intuitive to uncover the hidden meanings behind your aches, pains, and illnesses? Now you can. Internationally renowned medical intuitive Carol Reitberger is now offering personal and health-related readings. Discover your soul's purpose. Learn about the soul and the pre-birth agreements that you have with the people in your life. Readings can be booked online at www.reitberger.com. An hour with Carol can be life-changing.
Welcome back to the show, and if you're just joining me today, I'm talking about transforming emotional eating patterns. Interesting topic. It was actually a suggestion from a listener. So if you have a suggestion for me for a show that you would like me, a topic that you'd like me to cover, please go to my website, www.reitberger.com. And what I'll do is I'll try to slot it into my show schedules and topics and so forth, and then do exactly what I'm doing today. Also, I wanted to let you know that the download from my April Your Health teleclass is now available for purchase on my website at www.reitberger.com. The topic for the April teleclass was high cholesterol, very controversial topic. It took a lot to research it because when I looked at high cholesterol from the conventional medicine's perspective, they believe that high cholesterol is something that we have to take very, very seriously, and that the best way to be able to treat it is, of course, through drugs, specifically statin drugs. And yet then there was the other perspective from alternative doctors and healthcare practitioners that basically said that this whole high cholesterol is kind of this invented disease. The body needs to have a lot of cholesterol from the standpoint that literally every cell is made up of cholesterol and has to have it. If we didn't have it, we wouldn't have any shape or form to our body at all. We'd just basically be worm-like and blobs. So there's so much controversy. And then what alternative medicine does acknowledge is that there is something that does increase the risk for heart disease and increase the risk for heart attack, but it isn't that high cholesterol. It's more of the inflammation markers that can be found in the blood work. And the difference is where conventional medicine looks at prescriptions, statin-based prescriptions, then alternative doctors really look at it from the standpoint of what can we do naturally. So again, that isn't to say that if you have cholesterol and you're on statins, you're doing something wrong. I just really, when I wrote this teleclass, I decided that I really needed to offer both perspectives. I think the best way for us to become involved in the healing process, meaning being engaged and participating in our own healing process, is we have to be well informed. So in this particular download of the teleclass itself, there's an audio download as well as a printable PDF that's rich with information. I do actually show both perspectives. I look at what conventional medicine shows as far as the levels to be concerned. So again, it's a well-rounded, I hope, a well-rounded perspective. So should you find yourself in the dynamics of dealing with high cholesterol, you can have an idea of how to work with it conventionally, met with conventional medicine, and then also alternative. I look at it, how it looks in the energy field itself. I look at the psychological components. Triglycerides are tied to worry, and LDL is tied to hostility, and hostility surface because of that deep down resentment and frustration. So it's a very rich teleclass and document of how we can really heal on so many different levels, as well as energetic. And then once again, a lot of suggestions of different alternative choices that you can incorporate in your eating patterns, in your lifestyle, to be able to manage high cholesterol or to be able to eliminate it altogether. So again, if you're interested in looking at either one of the downloads, I've got a try before you buy. You can actually listen to a little small segment of the audio and then read a preview page of the PDF. And then you can decide whether you would like to purchase the downloads. I have, I think I've got 23 of them, 23 or 24 downloads of a lot of different illnesses. And I really do look at it from a holistic perspective. So again, that is on www.ritberger.com. So here's some suggestions of how you can actually change those emotional eating patterns. And this is really about being very honest with ourselves, as I said in the first segment, and really looking at when do we reach for food. If we're reaching for food not because we're hungry or because we need nourishment, then we have to see, is it a one-time thing or is there an actual pattern there? So if you find yourself that you really do have those emotional eating patterns, here's some suggestions. Take action. If you need to get out from under your emotions, do something other than eating. If you're feeling stressed, frustrated, or angry, do something active like taking a brisk walk, run around the block, or dance. I mean, that's something we can do. I work a lot on the computer, and in my home, I walk from one hallway into the hallway to the other end of the hallway, and that gives me at least a little bit of exercise. It gets me out of that stress process. It changes the pattern of, you know, sitting there and being so tense because, you know, I'm very, very human. There's times that, you know, I sit there and I think, wow, I really don't want to be doing what I'm doing. And it's so easy for me to go in and fix a cup of green tea or grab another piece of chocolate, whatever it may be. So I really have to be sensitive to those patterns. So those are some of the things that I personally do. Also, if you're feeling sad or you're lonely or you're unhappy, do something that's nurturing, such as soaking in a hot tub or taking a yoga class. I talked about taking these little 5-minute meditation breaks twice a day. Those are very, very helpful. It doesn't have to be an hour, but 5 minutes twice a day can literally quiet the body, allow it to restore itself, chemically and energetically. And then what we'll find is that we aren't as inclined to be reaching for food to be able to soothe ourselves. Take a breather. Deep breathing can relieve the urge to eat. It sounds simple, but it really does work, because what happens when we get stressed, angry, frustrated, sad, lonely, even depressed and everything, we hold our breath. We get rapid and shallow, and then the more stress, the more we feel guilty, or the more we, you know, have that negative self-talk, the more stress it creates. It's kind of an insidious cycle, like a dog chasing its tail. So all we have to do is just take a breathing break. Breathing actually relaxes the body, so it lessens that the stressful emotions that we're feeling that really cause us to have to reach for food. Another thing that you can do is shift your focus. Focus on something outside of yourself rather than eating. Look outside the window. Another thing I always share with people is what I call the 20/20 rule, is that you can, you know, if you're doing something that's sedentary, working on a computer or reading or sitting and watching TV or something, every 20 minutes get up and get up every 20 minutes and then look around 20 feet from where you're looking. So what that means is, if you're sitting at a desk, get up and then turn your focus on something that's 20 feet beyond you, and you'll find that you've probably missed a lot of things that are happening. I always look out my window and it's like, oh my gosh, I didn't even realize that tree was leafing out, or that tree is flowering or something, because I can become by personality so heads down that I don't really pay attention to anything other than what is literally in front of me. So the 20/20 rule is, every 20 minutes get up, and when you get up, look 20 feet beyond where you normally would be looking. Also pay attention to what's happening around you, maybe the sky, maybe people walking. Keep white noise or music playing in your work area or in your kitchen so it can divert you from the attention of food. We use white noise machines a lot to help relax us to go to sleep at night. They're very, very effective. That can be something that, maybe if you aren't inclined to want music on in your workspace all the time, is that when you do that 5-minute relaxation breathing process where you're going to go into that meditation, then you could use a white noise machine, or you could do music at that point in time. And it's very interesting how quickly your body will literally start to adapt and really look forward to that. It's almost like it'll crave that music and crave that quiet time rather than craving food. So those are some of the things that you can do. But most important, please do become aware of whether this is really emotional eating. If it is, accept it for what it is. Don't turn on yourself and become angry, because all that does is it actually increases the charge around the emotions that you're feeling inside. And those charge of emotions stimulate the secretion of hormones, serotonin, dopamine, the stress hormones. And all they do is they create that loud, clear noise that says, I must have food. I need energy. I need to be able to sustain myself. So again, be very straightforward, very honest with yourself. Don't beat yourself up, and look at one thing you can do every day that can move you out of that emotional eating pattern. And then, as I said, there's a lot of different mental health care professionals and hypnotherapy, extremely effective with transforming emotional eating patterns. All right, let me jump in. Hi, Elizabeth from Florida. How can I help you, hon?
Hey. I have a very bad knee, and you have read me before. You did a wonderful reading for me in January, a private reading, and I never wrote to thank you and tell you just how transformative it was.
Well, thank you, honey.
It was wonderful. I still refer to it. So just wanted to say that first.
Well, thank you for that.
I
made my heart smile.
Oh, good. Well, it certainly did for me as well. It was a great learning experience. The reading was just wonderful, and I recommend it.
Well, thank you. All right, so what are we dealing with? Wow.
Yeah, I fell, and I've actually fallen twice within a couple of weeks, and it's been a while. It's slow healing. I fell first back in March, and then in early April. I actually hit right on my left knee, and according to the chiropractor, I had dislocated it, but I was without any care for it because I was actually out of the country and working. So I didn't really rest it at first, and I just don't know why it's not getting better faster.
Well, there's a couple of things is that you've got, it's beyond just being dislocated. You feel like you actually hyperextended a lot of the muscles, and I can actually pick up a little slight injury. It almost looks like a very, very fine little tear in the ACL. And okay. So what is occurring is that that's the area that's still healing. The kneecap itself, where it became jarred, has fallen back into place. But we've got these tendons and we've got these the muscles that feel like they were hyperextended, and I've got inflammation in that area. And so what that lets me know is that, of course, it is still healing, but the fact that there's inflammation there, what it's trying to do, it's trying to immobilize that knee so it won't get injured anymore or stretched or pulled anymore. So while it's slow and it's healing, it's really doing, your body's doing exactly what it's designed to do. One of the things that I pick up, honey, is that it feels like the pressure that you keep getting on this knee that's causing it to be slow and healing is I can go up to the sacroiliac joint. It feels like on the right side. Was that where the injury was?
Well, it was. I hit both knees because the second time I hit the right knee, and I did have a lot of, I've had, you know, chiropractic and massage fairly regularly now, and mm-hmm. it's very tight in the lower back.
Yeah, and so it's, you know, was it the lower back that kind of caused this whole knee thing to happen? Probably so, if
really?
I were to go in and look at the origin.
The first time, I fell, I tripped over a door threshold. I just wasn't looking where I was going, and I landed on a marble floor, pretty much right on my left knee. And then the second time, I was walking quickly in an airport, and I was carrying a bag, and my shoe slipped a little bit, my foot twisted underneath me, so that ankle is still sore too. And I think what happened was because it hurt so much as I was crumpling over that already bad knee, I kind of ended up landing on my, like, thrusting myself onto my right side and landed on the right knee.
Yeah.
So it was really after that second fall that I started feeling the whole spinal thing.
Yeah, and because what happened is after the first fall, your right side of your body was muscularly trying to keep you balanced. It was trying to favor that left side so it could heal, and it just took on a lot of tension and a lot of weight in the way that your gait changed, your stride changed, your foot placement changed. I find that the right ankle, you know, kind of flexing outward to where it's turning your right foot. It's causing some stretching on that outer ligament, the metatarsal ligament and so forth in that area. So it was kind of, I hate to say it, but kind of like an accident waiting to happen from the standpoint your body was doing what it needed to compensate and to try to protect the left knee so it could heal. But in the process, it changed and altered so many things so dynamically that you were literally off balance muscularly. And as a result, your spine was a little bit twisted. Your sacroiliac joint became very, very tight. The muscles became very tight in the glutes. And it was literally just waiting for that right situation. And it could really have been something that could have just been that you would get out of bed and you would have taken a stride or a couple of things and you would have turned that foot. So that it, just so you know, that this was kind of a process in, a process that basically got you to where you are. But in doing that, the area that we really need to work at, the origin site, is in that lower back area. And by actually loosening up that area, and you can use some heat to be able to get those muscles to relax, then you can do some ice on that lower back, even though I know it's the knee that's the problem, but you can release the tension. That ice will actually release an endorphin that is about the equivalent of 1,200 milligrams of ibuprofen. It's very, very effective for quelling inflammation. And if we can get that inflammation to stop being produced, then what will occur is then the area will start to heal. But your body's doing what's designed. It's trying to immobilize it with the inflammation. But what that does is it continues the aggravation, and it doesn't allow it to heal as quickly as it needs to. A couple of things that you might want to look at doing is that you also might want to look at doing, go and work with someone who can do some physical therapy, yoga, or work with you from that particular standpoint so we can get that lower back loosened up. When that starts to loosen up, then if you can see that femur in that right ball socket, it's going to seat the way it needs to. The knee will seat the way it needs to because the kneecap is good. And that will take the pressure off of the ligaments in the knees that are trying to hold it tight or that got hyperextended. And what it'll do is it'll allow your knee to heal, and then it'll allow your ankles to have freedom in it. Your right ankle is really tight. And then with that ankle freedom, when it's not as tight, it's going to allow your right foot to drop down naturally the way it needs to, so it's seated in the arch instead of it being flexed out and feels like you're actually rolling your foot to the right outside. So those are the things. So in origin site, sweetie, I'd go right up to the lower back and start there, and then everything else will start to fall into place as that becomes more comfortable, and then you'll actually start finding some more healing.
Thank you.
You are welcome. Another thing you could do, have you seen an orthopedic surgeon?
No, I haven't.
That might be something, knowing your personality, since we got a chance to spend all this wonderful time together. It might be that you'll want to go talk to an orthopedic surgeon, just so the orthopedic surgeon can give you a picture of what's going on, would do some x-rays, but could then share their skill in understanding the skeletal structure and muscle structure of the body and be able to offer you some things that you could do that could help with that healing process and expedite it. And many orthopedic surgeons are not really, let's throw medication at it, inflammation or Cymbalta or Celebrex or anything like that. They really do a lot of natural work. You could put some Tremel on your knee. It's a homeopathic ointment that has a lot of healing qualities. Arnaflora, things you could do, castor oil packs you could do. But you might want to see an orthopedic surgeon just so we can get that brain turned off, because it's really fixated, which it should, because it hurts.
Okay. Oops, are you there?
I am.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. I just was letting you, you know, your mind process and everything with it. So just something, you know, just so you know you're okay. You know, sometimes we go to the doctors and we're not sure why, but boy, I'll tell you, they've got a lot of great education that can help us understand a little bit of the why of things.
I was really kind of astounded, because with the healing work that I do, and I was actually, it was awful, because I was teaching a class to healers. And there I was with a knee all swollen that I couldn't make go away. And
oh, gosh, I know. Don't we get humbled all the time? I love this.
Yeah. I mean, all I could say was, well, there's something here that I need to take care of, and I don't know what it is yet.
Yeah.
So was there anything that, because you talked to me in the past about the chakras, the knee chakras,
mm-hmm.
and it was related to getting started on my book, which I've done. Not, maybe
good
not
girl.
Absolutely. So is there anything metaphysical that is also behind the slowness, or is it just pure physical?
No, right now let's just deal with the physical so we can get your mind off of it and everything. You know, you've done so much great work. You know, as healers, we're very human. And there's times that we get so caught up in the healing and helping other people that we forget to get in our own bodies. And right now, if we can just get you in your body and to be able to deal with it physically, then your mind will stop fixating. Then you can get back to what you metaphysically want to do. But right now, your mind is saying, I need to fix this problem, and I don't know what it is. And
right.
Once you do that, then it's going to help you a lot. And congratulations on the book, Elizabeth. Thank you, sweetie, for calling me, and thank you for your kind words about the reading. I'm going to jump in and see if I can get Will on the line before I have to actually get off the air. Hi, Will.
Hi, Carol. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you. How can I help you?
We spoke once before in January about my immune system, and you posited that I had chronic Epstein-Barr, and,
yep.
and that seems to have been borne out by most of my experiences since then, although I haven't been able to get it formally diagnosed, because I think that's kind of a tricky process.
Right.
But I've implemented some lifestyle and dietary changes and things like that in the time since, and for whatever reason, I've developed a lot of new symptoms, and the ones that I had before have also gotten worse. So I'm a little bit concerned and a little bit frustrated. I've got I've got a rash all across my upper back and shoulders, and another one on my eyelids, and inner cheeks, like right on either side of my nose.
Mm-hmm.
And I, in researching that, I've come across something called dermatomyositis.
Yes.
This is, there's the shawl rash and the heliotrope rash. So that seems to be what that is. But I've also got this enlarged lymph node that is still swollen and hasn't gone down in size at all in about 6 or 7 weeks. And so now I'm starting to wonder whether I've got some form of lymphoma. I don't know what the hell's going on. And so I'm really kind of unmoored and a little scared. And
okay. Yep. And understandable. So the dermatomyositis, in that particular process, that is an autoimmune response that basically is attacking the muscles. And what it does is it elevates the creatine or the, I can go creatine. There's several different muscle enzymes that will actually trigger and everything. The best way for you to deal with that is, I'm going to have to just be very straightforward. You'll want to look at doing a steroid of some kind, probably prednisone for a short period of time. It's the only thing that really, if that is what the diagnosis comes up with, that is the only thing that will go in and will stop that inflammatory response the way that it needs to. What you have to do is get a handle on it before it gets a hold of you. That's a very honest statement right there.
Okay.
So that's something for you to look at. The lymph node itself is basically, it does not feel like a lymphoma to me. It doesn't have in my world, the energetics, the colors, the pattern associated with lymphoma. But what you do have is you have a lymph system that basically is so full, so compromised because of this reaction that's happening in your body. And so this is something that we need to jump on very, very quickly. So the best way to do it is to find a rheumatologist and then to go in. I can actually feel the rash. I can actually look at it. What you believe that it is most likely 100% accurate. And what you can do is you can get on a steroid program that will allow your body to help itself while it's trying to figure out what it needs to do. You can also continue a lot of the things that we looked at from the immune system. But I can tell you that this, what you're experiencing, is exactly the pattern with the Epstein-Barr. It's exactly the pattern with the fatigue. It's actually the pattern of the immune system. And what has occurred right now, well, is your immune system doesn't know what to do, honey. Your lymph nodes are overwhelmed. So that's the way. Jump on it right away. Take care of it right away. Just embrace what you need to do right away and then continue doing the alternative. But I don't think that we should allow this to continue while we're trying to do just alternative. This has reached a place where your body says, help me, help me.
It feels that way. So
it's
actually almost comforting to get that assessment.
Absolutely,
you.
It would. And, you know, we hear a lot about prednisone and the steroids and everything and a lot of
right.
the bad stuff. And it's hard on the liver. And, yes, that's all very true from the standpoint hard of the liver. But there's things you can do if you can find yourself a good naturopath or a homeopath. We can do milk thistle. We can do a lot of different things that you can do to help that liver work with what it needs to while it needs to help. One of the things they may say to you, honey, is that you're going to have to stay on this program for a long period of time. That part will just kind of do what you need to do, get on the program. If it's a high dose, take the high dose, and then work with the fact that you can, in combination of all these things, then you don't have to be on it as long as the doctor's going to recommend. That's what they have to do. They have to tell you that this is probably a year, 2 year process. The one thing is, if you're diagnosed with this, honey, I can tell you that this is treatable and it is curable, meaning that if you take the steps that are needed, this is something that basically will not be terminal, and it very likely is something that will not reoccur if we can get that immune system back healthy the way it needs to. But this has probably been a buildup for a long time, even when I read you, honey.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You said at the time it went back to childhood.
Absolutely.
All signs point to that. Going over my pediatric medical records, that seems like the picture. Can I ask you one other thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got about 1 minute.
Sure, I know we're down to the wire. Is there any sense in trying to combat the virus with something antiviral like Valtrex?
I wouldn't do any of that right now. You once you get into this process, you probably could. But the thing is, part of the problem is Epstein-Barr, if it isn't active in the body, then it takes a very elaborate process to try to identify that that's what it is. And so from this particular standpoint, what I would say, let's get to the doctor, go to a rheumatologist, get on some prednisone if that's what they decide, and let's do that, and then you can look at the other things that you can explore.
Okay, that's what I'll do.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining me today. It's always a pleasure to spend time with you and share my medical intuitive skills. Thank you, all of my callers and all of you who didn't get on the line. If you'd like to hear this show again or you want to share it with a friend, you can go to my archives at www.ritberger.com. This show is going to be posted in a couple of days. Thank you so much for joining me. Have a wonderful week. I'm going to be back next Wednesday at 10 o'clock a.m. That's Pacific Daylight Time. Light and love, and I'll see you next week on the radio. Have a good one.
You've been listening to the Carol Reiberger Show. Join Carol next week and every week at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on ContactTalkRadio.com. To contact Carol, visit her website at www.reiberger.com. That's www.ritberger.com. See you soon.